In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Parallel to the gang stalking topic is a phenomenon called MILABS. It's an acronym for military abduction. Dr. Helmut Lemmer of the Austrian Space Research Institute was one of the first to investigate this subject in his book titled MILABS, Mind Control and Alien Abduction. The term MILABS refers to a person who has experienced alien abductions and is later covertly interrogated, followed, stalked, and harassed by government or military agents. Often, there is a re-abduction process, which may include being drugged, disoriented by EM fields, and tagged with an implant. A writer for JAR magazine, the Journal of Abduction and Counter Research, Thomas Minderly, suggested several reasons for military abductions, including, quote, serving to create mind-controlled sleeper agents for societal engineering, such as selecting social outcasts to turn into mass shooters and assassins. Past guest Carissa Conti, who wrote about MILABS in her book Chasing Phantoms, writes, there are likely many more abduction cases that are not as grandiose and are more subtle. She points out there are military personnel and likely their family members directly being used for experimental mind control programs without their conscious awareness and without any connection with aliens. Could they be used as crisis actors, backdrop people, or key individuals creating false consensus during an engineered pandemic, for example? In fact, some military abductees are known to be in positions as first responders, such as EMTs, peace officers, or firefighters, says returning guest James Bartley. He is one of few experts on the topic of military abductions and adventures into the fringe of astral operations for intelligence, reconnaissance, remote viewing, and torture. We talk more about this nebulous world of military abductions with James Bartley, who has spent years conducting paranormal field investigations in California's high desert. He's an independent historian with emphasis on military history. He's given many lectures on his research worldwide and co-facilitated support groups for military abductees. James is also the host of the well-known paranormal and fascinating podcast, The Cosmic Switchboard. James, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, James, in her book, Chasing Phantoms, Carissa Conti made a list of those who are likely to be unwitting targets of military abductions or experimentation. They include, number one, being in the government or military, either in the past or present. Number two, having indirect ties to the government, military, through a parent or spouse. And number three, societies throw away kids in jails and juvenile detention and on the street, possibly incarcerated adults as well as those in mental institutions. James, you've been helping people understand MILABS for decades. I've heard about military abductions for many years, but outside of author Dr. Lammer, you and your colleagues such as Eve Lorgan, Carissa Conti, and the late Dr. Carla Turner, you all seem to be the main researchers on this topic. Please tell listeners more about your introduction to military abduction research.
How I first got interested in the subject, and keeping in mind that I didn't realize at the time that I myself had had these experiences, I only pieced that together later. I was living in San Diego and was a member in good standing of the San Diego UFO Society. My friend, the founder of the San Diego UFO Society, Sean Atlanti, he and I got into a discussion. We talked about the reptilian activity in the high desert of Southern California. And the subject of the military came up. He said, oh, yes, that area, Ridgecrest, China Lake, in Yokern, those places. Not only is there a lot of ET, particularly reptilian activity there, but like total military involvement. And from a surface level, absolutely right, because you have China Lake Naval Weapons Testing Center there. You have this big Marine Corps logistics depot at Barstow in the high desert. George Air Force Base, used to be George Air Force Base, and it's now a hub for some strange proprietary CIA-type airline right across the street from a FEMA prison, of all places. So I knew that there was a military connection, but he started talking about what he referred to as military-type cases. This was before the Helmut Lammert book came out. We didn't really have a name for military abductions back then. So Sean referred to these types of cases as military-type cases, where an individual, and my definition of a MILAB is someone who is first and foremost a legitimate alien abductee, who sometimes on occasion and quite frequently can start to have these military experiences, essentially kidnappings, which I'll get into. So Sean and I got into this discussion about military-type cases, and he cited a few examples. There was a gal named Leisha Davidson in the early days, in the 90s, in Southern California, who was talking about her military abduction experiences. Also, some of the early MILABs to come forward, Diane Johnston, who was a friend of mine, she lived in the Ridgecrest, China Lake area. Besides having a number of ET and reptilian experiences, she had military experiences. 1 week she'd be abducted by the elements of the Navy, and then the next week she'd be taken by elements of the Air Force. The Air Force would take her beneath George Air Force Base, there in Victorville, and the Navy would oftentimes take her to China Lake. Others were Pam Hamilton, who was the spouse of Bill Hamilton. Pam had been taken, she'd had a lot of reptilian experiences and experiences with Nordics, Nordic-looking beings, as well as gray-looking beings, for lack of a better term. And on occasions, for a period of time, quite frequently, the military would mess with her. As was the case with Leisha Davidson and others, the military had roughed her up, beat her up on occasion, come to her house or in a remote place that only had a mail route address that the post office would, you know, drop off her mail to. And she lived within sight of Tehachapi Mountain. Within Tehachapi Mountain is what's referred to by the locals as the Ant Hill, which is an underground facility set up by Northrop or for Northrop Aerospace. And Northrop later became Northrop Grumman, in the merging of two aerospace companies. And within this anthill complex, within this mountain in Tehachapi, California, was an underground base. On one occasion, she was abducted, put into, from all outward appearances, to be a flying saucer. It was crewed by aliens. She was flown a short distance to Tehachapi Mountain. Remember, she could see Tehachapi Mountain from her front porch. She was looking out a porthole or a window of the craft and looked down and saw the ground move away from the side of the mountain, exposing a landing pad beneath. She can look down and see the number 41 on this circular landing pad after the section of the mountain had moved away, and then the craft descended and brought her into the base. On another occasion, nowadays people hear about terms like dogmen, these werewolf-looking beings, which I'm satisfied they really do exist. Back in the 90s, she was accosted by a dogman/werewolf-looking being in a military uniform, who spoke to her in a guttural, growly voice. "We warned you to stop talking, Pamela," you're going to be sorry if you keep opening your mouth, or words to that effect. So it spoke English, albeit with kind of a guttural, kind of growling tone. And it's an example of how these dogman beings, at least some of them, either have been captured, turned, and made to work for the military. In this instance, it was an element of the Air Force that was working with them. Or they had somehow captured these dogman beings and, using genetic engineering, whatever the case may be, created this hybrid that had the ability to speak. So anyway, I'm kind of going off tangent, but point being is that when I got immersed into the subject matter, these were the cases that we discussed. And then Leah Haley came along, a couple of my friends, Sean Atlanti and Rob, the guy who eventually took over San Diego UFO Society. They went cross-country from San Diego to the Eureka Springs, Arkansas conference, which back in the old days was a great conference. I don't know if they have it anymore. But Leah Haley was one of the featured speakers, and her story really just knocked us for a loop, because aside from having encounters with several different types of ETs, including a rape experience with a reptilian, she likewise was getting kidnapped by elements of the deep black military. They would land a helicopter on one instance in her deserted homestead out there in Mississippi. And then they would force her at gunpoint, the military would, onto a helicopter, and they'd fly her to a nearby Air Force base. And they would bring her into a conference room, stick a needle into her arm or into her neck, and then interrogate her. And one of her interrogators, I'm not going to mention his name, but he's infamous in these circles. He's got a well-known surface-level personality, persona, profile. But in reality, at least back then, he used to mess with my labs. So that's how I got into it. And then when I began doing my own investigations in the high desert of Southern California, my colleagues and I, including Eve Lorgan and Craig Bowers, another friend of mine, we used to do reptilian stakeouts at our friend Lorena Smith's house. I've had Lorena on the show. Lorena was having encounters with reptilians, but also the military. And after a while, myself, Craig Bowers, and others that were part of our research team, we likewise started to have military experiences where not only would we be abducted by aliens, but like I said, the military would come along. The scenarios varied. Sometimes we'd be subjected to behavioral conditioning, sometimes sociological experiments, sometimes physical, very physical training. And some of the training seemed to be related to surviving these post-apocalyptic scenarios, whether it was a nuclear, biological, chemical environment or a war-torn society, civil unrest, foreign invasion, etc. We were trained to survive these apocalyptic scenarios. And it may not have been done purely for altruistic reasons. One could say, oh, well, they cared about you enough to put you through this training so you can survive. But if you look at it from the standpoint of an operational asset, these people, these deep black elements of the military, in my case, and in Lorena's case, largely deep black elements of naval intelligence, they had a proprietary interest in us. They trained us and mind controlled us and manipulated us for so long that, you know, they were loath to see us like die off in some apocalyptic scenario. So hence the training. That was my belief about it. And then when I did a life review, I realized that when I was a boy, my dad was active duty Navy for many years. That likewise, I'd been taken to these military hospitals and facilities when I was a boy and treated, let's say. So I'll pause there.
I'm getting the picture. Thank you, James. I really did not know this about you. And at what point did you start to learn about your abductions? So there was an alien abduction element, but also then military abduction. What were the key factors in beginning to have these memories surface, or some part of you began to put the pieces together that could help other people listening, maybe, who have had those experiences, but it hasn't come to the surface for them yet?
Well, when it became real for me, and I haven't really shared this much, but since you brought it up, I'd met a couple of guys at a conference. By then, I'm living in San Diego, and this is back when there used to be a lot of UFO conferences in California, especially Southern California, but every once in a while in my old stomping grounds, the San Francisco Bay Area. In this case, it was San Mateo, a suburb not too far from San Francisco. And there was a big UFO conference there, and a lot of the people in the circuit and the research community from Southern California and Arizona and Nevada, etc., went there. And myself, since I'm from San Jose, I flew up from San Diego and went up to San Jose for the weekend for this conference. And it was at a lecture. Oh, I think it was Richard Thompson who spoke about alien identities, the proof of the alien presence in the Vedic texts, which is absolutely must reading. But anyway, I attended that lecture, and then I was sitting in the audience, and like in between lectures, I started up a conversation, or a couple of guys started up a conversation with me, and we got to chatting, and the subject turned to military abductions, of all things. And they told me that they knew a gal that lived near Alum Rock Park in San Jose, and that was my old stomping grounds. Me and my friends used to hike in Alum Rock Park in San Jose, which is a mountainous, wooded, forested place called Alum Rock because ages ago, an asteroid laden with aluminum crashed into that area, and there's like a layer of aluminum there, so hence the name Alum Rock Park. Point being is that they knew a gal personally who lived near Alum Rock Park, my old stomping grounds, and she was an alien abductee, and she said on one occasion, two military guys barged into her house in the middle of the day, and I've heard this similar variations of this. They accosted her. They sprayed an aerosol can at her, which had a citrusy type smell. If memory serves, Leisha Davidson, the aforementioned Leisha Davidson, talked about this same aerosol that had a citrusy type smell. It rendered the gal basically unable to resist, and they hauled her off to some secret locale, and they interrogated her, and I think they worked her over. They may have tortured her, right? Now, when I start hearing these stories, there's a streak of righteous indignation that runs down my back that like widens out and expands, you know, many orders of magnitude. I just get so irked and upset when I hear these things, because it's bad enough that we're having alien abduction encounters and that's denied and lied about, and they won't even touch the subject of alien abductions in these faux congressional inquiries. They don't want to go there. So it's bad enough that we're having these alien abductions. When we do go forward, we're ridiculed or we're harassed, et cetera, et cetera. But on top of that, people are getting kidnapped, drugged and debriefed, interrogated, sometimes quite harshly, by deep black elements of the military. So it's like pouring salt in the wound, Jeff, is the way I felt about it. And back then, a lot of us, my labs, Leah Haley, I talked to about this, a number of other people, we had a very much of a us and them mentality. It wasn't like today, where a lot of people don't really seem to have this animus or hostility or mistrust about these deep black elements. Indeed, it seems to me that at least some of these people, I'm not being critical, I'm just making an observation, they almost seem to identify with their military captors, right? And take at face value everything they're told by them. And I must stress that, I mean, I take with a grain of salt anything these military kidnappers do, because they radically violate our sovereign rights. They kidnap us, they drug us, they mess with us in myriad ways, interpersonal relationships, which I can get into, et cetera, mind control, not the least of which. So when I heard about this gal who was basically kidnapped by these military guys that lived near Alum Rock Park, well, I got contact information from these two guys, and then I got their phone number. And then, as fate would have it, I was living with three active duty military guys at the time. One of them was a Navy policeman. I won't mention his name. He's still a good friend of mine. And here I am, I'm on the phone networking with these two guys because I want to talk to this gal, right? Now, I should add, at the same time all this was going on, I was working in communications for Commander Naval Air Force's U.S. Pacific Fleet, because by then I was living in San Diego, passed the federal exams, and then, you know, submitted all these applications. I submitted resumes and applications to every spooky military base you can think of, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, et cetera, China Lake. But eventually I got interviewed in San Diego where I was living, which was fine, and wound up working at Naval Air Station North Island for Commander Naval Air Force's U.S. Pacific Fleet. And because I was reaching out to this gal, it was a confluence of events, circumstances, because I was living with active duty military people who were not in on this. They're just doing their own thing, strictly surface level. Because I was working in a sensitive government communications position, and because I was wearing my other hat of alien abductee researcher, my lab researcher, I thought nothing of, hey, I'll get in comms with this gal. You know, I live near Alum Rock Park. You know, we have something in common. I want to find out what happened to her. And long story short, it's the amount of harassment, manipulation. I started getting all these harassing phone calls where I'd pick the phone up either at home or at work, and I just hear these clicks. And it's pure psychological warfare, right? On one occasion, I talked to Leah Haley about this because she heard a very similar recording where I pick up the phone, I say hello, and I'm at home on this occasion. And your mind starts to fill in the blanks you're hearing. So it sounded to me that someone was sitting at a desk and like rolling a pencil around, picking up a paper clip or something, and you know, moving things around on their desk, and then getting up and slowly walking around the desk, not saying anything. And by now I'm screaming, what do you people want from me? Leave me alone. Okay, I'll stop contacting her. I'll leave her alone. Because when I was at work, we used non-secure phones. So when someone calls your office, you're obliged to remind the caller that they're speaking on a non-secure line. That way they don't blur out any classified information. And I had a spiel. ComNav AirPAC, Staff Communications, there's a non-secure line, James speaking. I could say it really fast, right? And even before I got that blurb out, I just hear the clicks. And we all shared the same phone, the same extension number, right? So other people in my department, civilian and military, these were Navy radio men and radio women, even in the secure message center, which you needed to punch an access code into the door in order to access it, right? They were getting these phone calls with clicks. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm not saying a word. You know, the paranoia is building up. And then it built up, get this, because I don't want to get too deep into what happened to me, because it detracts from the overall situation of trying to get information out to the listeners. I don't want to sow too much despair and fear and, you know, paranoia into the mix. But you asked me how I got into this, and, you know, I kind of got thrown into it. But and understand that they knew my schedule. I had to take a base bus to the main gate, and then I took a city bus into downtown, like Broadway Avenue there in San Diego. And from there, I took another bus back to the suburb I lived in, Claremont, right? Two city buses and one base bus just to get home and get to work. So, you know, it really culminated in, because they knew my schedule. Like, even before I set foot into the front door, the bloody phone would start ringing, right? And my roommates would be puzzled. Oh, we keep getting these crank calls. So I'm getting them at work. I'm getting them at home. There were two things. I'm not going to get into one of them because it goes in a really dark, negative direction. But on one occasion, I'm at work, and my desk was to the left of the main window there because of the John Walker spy ring case. By that point, he was in Naval Communications. They had to plant shrubbery and trees by windows of communication centers, and then also for added security, they put like steel bars in the windows, right? So my desk was not directly in front of the window, it was off to the side. Get this, because of the angle of where I'm sitting, I can look out the window and I can see there's a parking space reserved for the Admiral, okay? Nobody sits in the parks there. On one occasion, there was a white sedan with U.S. Marine Corps in big black letters on the side, and sitting in the passenger seat was an extremely tall, what can I only describe as a human Nordic hybrid. Sitting next to him at the driver's seat was a very tall guy wearing camouflage BDUs, woodland pattern camouflage BDUs, speaking into a walkie-talkie. So tall, I could only see up to his chest and maybe his chin. The person that I really got a good look at was what I later determined was his hybrid, Nordic. My apologies, I've been battling a chest infection, who was glaring at me and psychically pushing these murderous thoughts into my head. And, you know, when something stares at you, you know, you stare back, and vice versa, you stare at something, it'll stare back at you. And that's what happened. I felt this presence. So I looked through the leaves of these trees that are planted in front of the windows there. And then I see through the trees this white sedan, U.S. Marine Corps, and this Nordic guy glaring at me with hate in his eyes and just classic Nordic hybrid, square-jawed, very tall, sandy brown hair, blonde hair. And there's a military guy, and he's speaking to a walkie-talkie, and this thing was pushing these thoughts of rage and anger into my head. And all this is going on with these people around me at work. Anyway, I'll just leave it there and say that was when I realized that there was this deep black element that was deeply involved in this. And then on top of that, Jeff, because I kept going out to the high desert in Southern California, and you know, I'm wearing my multi-hat thing, and back then, and still to this day, people were so paranoid that I didn't tell people that I worked for Naval Communications, right? Because then they would think that I am a spy, and some of my detractors and enemies in the old days, oh, Bartley, he works for Naval Intelligence, you know, all this other crap. Meanwhile, I'm getting harassed by Naval Intelligence, right? So, anyway, then I started having these military abduction experiences of being trained, lots of running, lots of swimming, although I can swim in real life. I'm not a strong swimmer. I can do it in short bursts, but in these training scenarios, it was just like endless, seemingly, and the endless amount of running. And I'd wake up in the morning feeling like I'd run a marathon. And then when I did the life inventory, I realized that as a boy, I had a problematic childhood as far as my health was concerned. And, you know, my parents, when an active duty military person or retired person is sick, they go to the military doctors. In the case of retirees, they go to the VA, Veterans Administration hospitals. Active duty, they go to a military hospital on a base, typically, right? And they do the same for their dependents. And because I had this problematic childhood, which I think, looking back now, it was externally imposed. Things were done to me to make me sick. And then my dad, you know, and my mom being, you know, doting, dutiful parents, they took me to these military doctors like they're supposed to. And then that's when, as a boy, I started getting worked over because they told my mom to give me these sedatives, supposedly to combat car sickness, and I would be drugged out and have missing time. I was taken to places like Oak Knoll Naval Hospital, Notorious Mind Control Center, I found out later, ditto, the Army Letterman General Hospital at the Presidio, another, found out later, Mind Control Center, Balboa Naval Medical Center in San Diego, I was taken there also, another Mind Control Center. So when I zoomed out and I thought back to what happened when I was a boy, and there were times when I woke up with wires stuck in my head in the middle of the night at a medical clinic when I was a boy. Just woke up and I would have these wires sticking out of my head. So point being is that I realized when I was going through the military training, when I was an adult, and this is, you know, parallel and on the heels of all this harassment I was just talking about, and I didn't even talk about all of it. I was run off the road by March Air Force Base, by government agents who tried to kill me. It gets pretty deep and pretty dark, okay? So when I zoomed out and I realized, you know what? I was always being taken to these military hospitals when I was a boy. So now, with the benefit of hindsight, I realize that it was part of a continuum. They didn't just start abducting me because I was going out to the high desert and my friend Lorena was being messed with by reptilians and the military, in this case, a deep black element, once again, of naval intelligence, that this thing had been with me all my life. And I'm satisfied that there's a genetic bloodline aspect to it, because many people that are in the military, active duty, that are alien abductees, the system seems to find out who they are. And I think this is how it works, because from my perspective as a military dependent, the deep black military had access to all my medical records, especially how often I was taken to these facilities when I was a boy. So they would have known that there was some kind of genetic marker which identified me as an alien abductee, and B, having latent, innate, metaphysical gifts, let's say, psychic abilities, because that's another commonality. And by this point, and this is like the 90s, I'd spoken to a number of people that were retired military, alien abductees in my labs, and they told me similar tales that while they were in the ranks, while they were in the military, they were getting mind control. They were getting my lab. They would be pulled underground beneath the bases, the military posts they worked at, and they'd be worked over. And they talked about missing time experiences, being worked over by psychologists and what have you.
Appreciate you going into detail on these personal experiences. They're really important because it's very likely there are listeners that may have similar things that have happened to them. One thing that you had mentioned in a previous interview is how some people become aware of these military abduction experiences, and especially in the astral military operations. And if you can summarize some of this information, that would be good. But you mentioned that people who suspect there have been military abductions occurring to them, that they would find out they had a shared dream with their friends or maybe work colleagues. Could you go into that a little bit more?
Yes, that's a very good question. We are the sum of all of our parts. We are multidimensional quantum beings, essentially. And like I said, these deep black elements of the military, be it naval intelligence, Air Force intelligence, Army intelligence, Department of Energy, whatever the case may be, they seem to know which ones of us have had these experiences, and potentially, perhaps based on morphogenetic resonance fields, DNA profile, whatever the case may be. And I was one of those people who seemed to have been tested for psychic abilities as a boy, because in some of these scenarios when I was a boy, I'd find myself like in a dark room with, you know, dim lighting with other children, and we were being tasked with trying to activate some device with our minds, you know. Each child in the circle would have a go at trying to activate certain things. And we've heard variations of this with those ESP cards. If someone can determine sight unseen, whether it's the wavy lines or it's some other symbol. So we know that they actively seek out people that have these kinds of gifts, let's say. And the shared dreams, well, that's a facet of this, because many of us have had out-of-body experiences. We know from alien abductions that aliens can take our consciousness, our astral bodies, quite easily. I'm satisfied for some time now, deep black elements of the military, probably private contractors as well, likewise have the means to tune into someone's astral body consciousness matrix and yank it out of people's sleeping bodies, or conversely, while they're sleeping, subject them to these astral virtual reality experiences, training scenarios. From all outward appearances, it looks like the person's just laying there sleeping, but their consciousness is brought to a place and put into a virtual environment which may mimic a real world environment, and they're put through their paces through training. So the military, along with aliens on occasion, because there is some overlap, where on occasion my labs will find themselves in settings and scenarios where they see humans and human military, human medical personnel working in conjunction with non-human life forms. That's part of this equation as well. So say if somebody has a natural ability to astral travel, which I used to have lots of astral experiences, they would train us in astral operations, whether it's spying, whether it's intelligence gathering, whether it's paramilitary training. And it's not only that they're able to access us and use us as astral operators and in real-world missions too, because I've spoken to people and I have recollections myself in my astral body being sent down in the tunnel systems in Afghanistan, what appeared to be, what seemed to us to be Afghanistan. This was after the invasion of Afghanistan and the bogus war on terror. If people that have done your service level history research know that the Saudi bin Laden group had developed all these tunnel systems in Afghanistan back in the day, and the former quote-unquote allies of the CIA, the Taliban, and what they deemed Al-Qaeda started taking refuge in these tunnel systems. And what they did was they sent astral operators like myself. I have another friend who I haven't spoken to her in a while, but she lives in Texas, and she was likewise sent in these tunnels. And also my aforementioned friend Lorena, who I'd spent many nights at her house in reptilian stakeouts, staying in a room where the reptilians came out of the closet. And she was likewise using these ops. And in fact, we were all used together on occasion. And what we would do in our astral bodies, and there's a controller speaking to us telepathically, telling us where to go, what to look for. We would identify locations where these Taliban slash Al-Qaeda, call them what you will, were hiding out in. And remember, these were tunnel systems already built by the Saudi bin Laden group, so I'm sure the controllers who sent the astral operators in there, the MyLab astral operators, had schematics, blueprints, plans, whatever the case may be. So once they would identify the location of these terrorists, so-called, underground, depending on the depth of the tunnel system they were in at the time, through channels, an airstrike would be called in, earth-penetrating ordnance would be sent into these bunker tunnel systems and blow these people up. And Lorena was telling her controller, don't drop a bomb in here because you're going to kill me, right? And she was saying, she was told by the Navy, don't worry about it. You won't feel a thing. Just observe. Tell us what you're observing. And so she's, you know, describing these so-called Taliban. And Next thing you know, an explosion happens, wipes everyone out, but she's still standing there. Interesting, somewhat tangential, but they've done something similar to Lorena, where they sent her back into ancient Rome, where she was in, once again, in her astral form, and was there walking amongst people in the forum and places like that. And she was just tasked with reporting what she saw. She was probably not the first one using such an operation. Also in Iraq and in the Balkans during the fragmentation and destruction of Yugoslavia, the vilification of the Serbs, etc., etc. Many my labs back then were likewise sent into these war-torn regions where they were made to operate, either on their own with a team, paired up with someone from the opposite sex, because this also delves into alien love bite issues, where the controllers may deem it necessary to bond a male and female my labs in our scenario, in our example, bond them together emotionally, physically, sexually. And then these two people begin to have astral psychic experiences, synchronicities, etc. It tends to bond them emotionally to one another. I guess the theory behind it is they're more willing to take chances for one another in these combat areas, more likely to be protective of one another, more mission-oriented. The astral dreamscape scenarios are these people are taken out of their bodies and they're trained astrally. And sometimes it could be an outdoor setting. Sometimes it could be like what seems to be an indoor setting, but it's a virtual environment. And they're put through their paces, whatever the training scenario might be. But for all outward appearances, it looks like the person is laying there sleeping. But really, their consciousness, their astral bodies have been accessed and are being put through their paces in these training scenarios. And what's interesting is they can not only instill alters in us when we're in our physical bodies, but they can also activate alters when we're in our astral bodies. So someone other than our normal waking consciousness is guiding our astral bodies in some of these experiences, and they tie it in with, like, there's a lot of dreams and dreamscape scenarios, and this delves into a whole slew of different subjects, alternate realities. The astral dreamscape manipulation and its relationship to real experiences, which seem to be dreams in some cases, but were actually real experiences. This happened to me on a number of occasions. This is before, really, there were message boards and social media. So we would either start a daisy chain on emails or call each other up. And a typical scenario would be I would email like several others that were in a dream with me last night. And in the dream scenario, I'll give you an example. We were in a military facility. There was naval personnel. We were being shown things, taught things. And then maybe there was some element of paramilitary type training. And say in the scenario, I saw Lorena there. I saw Craig there. What I would do is I would send an email, CC all of them, and say, I had a dream last night. You were in it, Craig. You were in it, Lorena. This is what I saw. This is what we did. Do either of you remember anything? And then often as not, they chime back and say, yes, I had the same dream, but it wasn't a dream. It was a real experience. See, Lorena had this way of retaining a lot of conscious awareness during her experiences. Me, not so much, because people describe me at times as being all zombied out, right, in these scenarios. But other times I'd have more, at least outwardly, it seemed I'd have more conscious awareness. I was more, you know, tuned in. But I would say to Lorena, well, yeah, I had a weird dream, and you and I were in this medical facility. She goes, no, that wasn't a dream. We were really there. I was trying to wake you up. I was trying to make you understand it was a real experience. And she used to do that. And I gave my friends leave to, you know, if you saw me in a scenario and I was all zoned out and zombied out, you know, slap me, do what it takes to make me wake up, you know. So I would tell my friends this. And then if the information coming back, the feedback coming back was very detailed. Then I get on the phone. I call these people. Okay, tell me what you remember. Tell me what you saw. And then we gradually piece together that a lot of the times that we thought that we were just having dreams, or at least I thought I was having dreams, these were in fact real experiences. And there's a fudge factor, Jeff, because sometimes, as I stated, these were not physical experiences, they were astral experiences. So, you know, on those occasions, I would defer to those who had, you know, more conscious awareness than I did at the time. And then, like Lorena or someone would say, no, that this was a physical experience the night before, and it got so hardcore for us that we were having several of these experiences a week at night, sometimes individually, sometimes in groups, like group MyLab experiences. And it became apparent to us that some of these dreams were not really dreams at all, that they were, because our consciousness was muted or affected in some way, for some of us it came off as dreams or fragmented dreams, but in reality there were real physical experiences of being an underground base or on the surface on a military facility somewhere. And again, it could segue in different directions. You could be getting trained by military and or aliens for various paramilitary training purposes. So yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but definitely there's a fudge factor between determining if the previous night's experience was a physical experience, was an astral experience. If it was an astral experience, was it an astral environment, a virtual environment? So we had to unpack a lot of things back then.
I would imagine it's very difficult to unravel and figure out what's going on, especially back then. I don't really understand it even now, what the purpose might be. Is it just pure manipulation? Do they need parts of us to facilitate some kind of work because we have specific DNA with the frequency that they need? And is there this alternate universe that uses like different parts of our astral soul or something? The questions just keep going. Well, James, this is really fascinating material, and I am slowly kind of learning about it, although it has been trending for many years, this topic, but I for some reason rejected it. Now, listeners may remember the late Don Croft. He was a past guest several times on the show. He ran the Etheric Warriors website. Great forums about gang stalking and selling some of the best organite and zappers out there. He was visiting his daughter in New York City, and we met up. I got the opportunity to meet him. We met up at a pizza restaurant in Brooklyn. Now, the front of this restaurant was all glass, so you could see the entire street and sidewalk and people walking by. As we were talking, I noticed a guy, maybe in his 30s, dressed down a bit, but it's hard to tell. He was staring at us through the window. He would walk away and come back and stare kind of strangely. I ignored it for a while until it got too weird to ignore. I explained it to Don. What was going on, and he said, "Jeff, it happens a lot to me and Carol." He said, "The sewer rats can watch us through his eyes." Now, James, have you heard of this type of human commandeering, and is it MyLab related?
Yes, there are elements in it that are definitely MyLab related, and there's two facets of it. First, I'll talk about the military, and there's probably some overlap with defense contracting involved too, private contractors. But the aforementioned Pam Hamilton, her and Bill Hamilton. Bill was one of the great old school UFO researchers. He developed many sources within the aerospace community in the Antelope Valley in Southern California, and he'd had his own experiences going back to childhood, and the aforementioned Pam, who had a lot of reptilian ET experiences taken underground beneath the Anthill facility there in Tehachapi Mountain. Anyway, her and Bill, Pam and Bill, were over by the notorious, what used to be the Black Mailbox near Groom Lake. They've since painted it white because people kept stealing it for souvenirs. But anyway, Bill was very assiduous at keeping track of time because he knew about the missing time factor. So he's out there, he's got his binoculars, middle of the night, Pam was alongside of him, and then what he saw defied rational explanation. There was an odd-looking vehicle that drove right behind them, oddly, didn't leave any sound of its passing, right? Seemed to go by almost in a weird blur. Well, what they saw was he saw a light source in front of Groom Mountain Range, and it was getting brighter, and it seemed to be getting closer. And just then, this funny looking vehicle drives behind them. Bill, who's very assiduous at keeping track of time, looked at his watch, and then he blew his top because like 15 or so minutes had elapsed without them knowing it, right? So they went back home. Their home was a double-wide trailer at Pat and Joe Travis' place over at Little Alien in Rachel, Nevada. Bill woke up from a dead sleep, sat up bolt upright. He started screaming, basically, and had this horrible flashback of being on a table, inverted at like a 45-degree angle. He was on it, and he was being examined by a 6-foot-tall gray. They regressed Bill. Turned out, get this, Bill was taken on board a flying saucer, examined by a tall gray. The tall gray telepathically told him, your heart is racing. We're going to do what we can to keep you from having a heart attack. Oh, by the way, do you know that the military here at this test site, i.e. Area 51, is experimenting with time manipulation? Also, in this process, the gray alien told Bill, describe the alternate world's reality as being like two bubbles side by side, but each bubble representing a universe pulsing or beating at a certain frequency. They connect, but they're not part of the same. And so it was an example, Bill was told, of alternate realities, right, which factors into my lab experiences also. Meanwhile, Pam was taken on board a van by two guys with black SWAT team uniforms, black ball caps, and black wraparound Oakley Ray-Bans. This is the middle of the night. They hauled Pam on board. She said the inside of the van was lined with computer equipment, consoles, etc. They held Pam down and said, I'm sorry, Pam. They knew her name. We have to make an adjustment on your ocular implant. And so they did something with some tool, probably some electromagnetic device of some kind, to adjust this ocular implant in her left eye. Now, Barbara Bartholik used to show me pictures of well-known people, and it would show that they had a lazy left eye, and I have one too, which tells Barbara, and to me Barbara was the ultimate alien abduction researcher, that that person has had or has had in the past an implant, right? So here are these weird paramilitary SWAT guys working on Pam's left eye. Point being is that she was given to understand, and I've been given to understand from other witnesses, that the military, presumably aliens, can do the same thing, can quote-unquote see out of someone's own vision. Like, for example, I'm looking at a computer screen right now, and the capability exists for some person in some remote facility to be looking at what I'm looking at. So we know ocular implants exist. We know that alien abductees have reported this many times. Betty Andreessen had her eyeball removed, and then the Greys put an implant behind her eye and then replaced the eye. They have the means to do this, seemingly bloodless, no pain. There might be some discomfort. A quick point about my labs also is, just as alien abductees are left with bruises and marks, anomalous marks on their bodies in the aftermath of an alien abduction, likewise with my labs. I've woken up with puncture wounds in my upper bicep, puncture wounds in the crook of my elbow, all these raised dots along my right forearm that came into to form a big diamond, etc., etc. So not only do aliens leave us with marks, but elements of the military and associated deep black medical elements also work us over and leave marks on us, sometimes leave up splotches, different colors, teal blue, lime green, oval-shaped markings, etc., etc.
That's going to do it for the first part of this interview on military abductions, or MILABS, with James Bartley, who is a military abductee himself and an expert in the topic. As you heard, James can cite many cases from friends or known witnesses, as his long-form responses refer to personal experience and puts the topic of the question in context. Yes, this subject matter is on the edge of belief systems, as you'll hear in part two, and it's what this show brings forward, an aspect of reality many have likely experienced, yet relegated to the fringe. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.